Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Samach Benamad Aleph by the Gemara. The Mishnah discussed the fact that if a person lives with an akum, the Tanakhama says that that akum or that kuti causes a problem for him in terms of Eruv. On the other hand, we had Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say that that problem only arises when you have two Yisraelim plus an akum, then that problem arises. If it's one-on-one, then you don't have that problem. So Yotiv Abaye Baravin, Rav Chinna Rabavin, Yotiv Abaye Gabayu. So Yotiv Gamre. So you have Abaye Baravin, Rav Chinna Rabavin, and Abayu is sitting with them. And they're sitting and saying, Bishlam other Rabbi Meir Kasavar. We can understand Rabbi Meir's position. Dirat Oved Kochavim Shma Dirat. The residence of an Oved Kochavim has the status of a residence. Veloshna Chad, Veloshna Trey. So then we understand his position as to why, as soon as you have one Oved Kochavim in the Chatzer, already you cause a problem. Because as soon as you have one individual in there, he has a status of Dirat, he has a status of living a residence. And he's going to cause a problem for the Jew that is living there in terms of Eruv on Shabbat. Hello, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, Maika Savar. What's Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position? Ika Savar Dirat Oved Kochavim Shma Dirah. If he thinks that the residence of an Oved Kochavim is actually considered a residence, Afilu Chad Nami Nitzar. Then why do you need two? One should be sufficient. Why is he waiting until you have two Jews in there? Why should it make a difference? Vilo Shma Dirah. If it's not considered a residence, Afilu Trey Nami Lo Nitzar, then even when you reach two Jews in there, why does it make a difference that there's an Oved Kochavim in there? The Oved Kochavim has no bearing on the situation. So Amar Lehu Abaye. So Abaye responded. We would have known that. The Rabbeinu Tam says in other places, the heading of this Gemara is, Abaye Ravin, Rav Chinna Ravin are sitting together, and Abaye is sitting with them. They could have said all three of them were sitting together. The fact that the Gemara delineates Abaye separately and says he was sitting with them, we should expect Abaye to be the one who makes the statement in the Gemara, the one who brings the Chiddush here. And that's what we have here. Amru Abaye. V'sova Rabbi Meir, dirat akum shma dirah. Does Rabbi Meir really believe that the residence of an Oved Kochavim is considered to be a residence? V'atanya. Chatzero shel Oved Kochavim harihu gedir shel be'ema. The chatzer, or the dirah of an Oved Kochavim, has the status of a dir shel behema, equivalent of a corral of animals. It doesn't have any status halachically. Ella, so what you must say, dekulei ama dirat akum lo shma dira, that the dira of an akum doesn't have any status of residence. V'hocha, b'gzeira shema yomad mimasav kamiflege. They're arguing about the problem, or the chashash, that you might learn from your neighbors. We're afraid that your neighbors will have undue influence over you, and if you have people there that are not shomrei Torah or mitzvot, that will impact on you. So how do we prevent that? We make it difficult for you to live in that situation. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Savar Keva, and Dovi Kochavim Chashud Ashvichat Damim. We saw this in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the Ovi Kochavim, there were suspicions about their being murderers, and therefore a person would not live alone with an Oved Kochavim. For his own safety, he would not live alone with an Oved Kochavim. So because of that, Trey Dishchichi, the Direk Garzru Behu, Chadoshiach Lo Garzru Barabonon. Because of that, the normal situation in which you'll have Jews and non-Jews living together would be with two Jews plus the Akum, because then they would feel safe, then they'd feel comfortable being in such a situation. So if that's the common case, that's where the Chachamim instituted their Gzeirah. On the other hand, on a one-on-one situation where that's a very uncommon occurrence, where a person was unlikely to do that just because of his own safety, then the Chachamim didn't come and institute anything in that case. So that's why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that in the Mishnah, only once there are two Yisraelim there does it make a difference, because that's the common case that we're going to encounter. Rabbi Meir Savar, Zimnin Demikri Vidayir, sometimes that it happens that there is a one-on-one situation, Ve'amru Rabbanan, Ein Eruv Mo'il B'makom Akum, and the Rabbanan said that an Eruv does not help when you have an Akum in that area, Ve'ein Bitul Rishut Mo'il B'makom Akum, and the relinquishing of their ownership does not work in that situation. Ad shiaskir, until you rent it. Vakum lo mogar. And the assumption is that the akum will not rent it out to you. So what they did was, to make it difficult, they took away the normal procedures or normal ways that you would make an eruv chatzerot. When you have an eruv chatzerot, you join together with the food. Or you have one of the individuals who's not going to join in, b'mvatel reshut, give up or relinquish their ownership in the chatzer. So those are the normal methodologies for creating an Eruv Chatzerot. So you remove that ability when it comes to an Akum, and you say the only way you can do that is to rent the property from him, to actually rent the space from him. And he's not going to be willing to rent. So this is a dissuasion from you continuing to live in this situation, because either the Akum will refuse to rent it to you. Or even if he rents it to you, the outlays every week of having to rent it from him will weigh on you and hopefully change your mind about living in this chatzer, in this courtyard. So my taima, why won't he rent it to you? So now, if you think that he's worried about you taking possession of his property, that works well according to one who says that you need a full-fledged rental over here. According to one who says that you can have a subpar rental, then how do you explain that? The Akum is not going to worry when you make this subpar rental, what I would call a hecker of sorts, a schirut that is symbolic in nature, not actual schirut. Then what do you say? Ditmar Rav Chista amar schirut bria, Rav Sheshet amar schirut ri'ua. This rental that you make from the Akum, Rav Chista says it has to be a full-fledged rental. Rav Sheshet says it can be a subpar rental. My ri'ua, my bria. What's the difference between subpar and a regular rental? Ilema bria b'pruta ru'a pachot misha b'pruta. You would think that a regular rental has to reach the threshold of a shove pruta to be a real rental, whereas ru'a would be for even less than a shove pruta. Mi ikon aman damar mi'akum b'pachot misha b'pruta alo. Who says that with less than a shove pruta, it would not work with an akum? Baha, shalach Rabbi Yitzchak b'Rabbi Yaakov b'gurire mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan. Akum afilu pachot misha b'pruta. You could rent from an akum even with less than a shava pruta. Ve'amar Rabbi Chiyar bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Benoach ne'erag al pachot mishava pruta. Benoach gets the death penalty for less than a shava pruta, v'lo nitan lehishavon, and it cannot be returned. So this all comes together in a package that has to do with the dinim with regards to the shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach. The shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach, one of the shiva mitzvot is gezel, is stealing. When it comes to stealing by Jews within the halacha, Jew from a Jew, if they stole, then shave pruta is the threshold for something to be considered stolen. Below a shave pruta, then most individuals will be mochel on that. We assume that a Jew would be mochel on that amount, and it's not incorporated or there's no necessity for hayishavon to return it. The Torah says by a Jew, if the person does steal it, veshivet gzela asher gazal, that you return the gzela that you stole. So that is the rectification of the gzela, is that you return it. So there are two halachot here. One halacha is that the threshold for gzela is shaveh pruta. The second is that yeshivet gzela asher gazal, which is that you can rectify the situation by returning the gzela. But Ben Noach, they have neither of those options. If Ben Noach was chayvin gzela, number one, they were not granted v'heshivet gzela asher gazal. There is no such remedy or rectification for stealing. If they steal, they're chayav mita, they have a death penalty like all the other shiva mitzvot b'nei Noach. In addition to that, they are not mochel on pochal mishave pruta. And since they're not mochel on pochal mishave pruta, then it's considered to be gzela even when it's less than shave pruta. Or, less than shave pruta has significance in their eyes. Because of that, the halacha is that you can have a schirut with them if it's less than a shave pruta. By a Jew, that wouldn't work because you don't have anything of significance. The money that's changing hands here, less than a shev pruta, is not significant enough to create a schirut. On the other hand, for the akum, it's significant because he's makpid, even on pachot mishev pruta. So those are the dinim that we just saw here, that pachot mishev pruta and more than a shev pruta by an akum has no difference in halacha. Halachically, they're the same, whether you're above that threshold or below that threshold. In addition to that, lo nitan leishavon, there is no return of property. It does not work. The return of property. Rashi says that it doesn't work at all, that the Hashavah doesn't have any application or implications by them. On the other hand, Tosafot wants to argue that it depends on who they stole from. That if they stole from Israel, then it's lo nitan lehishavon. That by a Jew, if he stole less than a shavah pruta, he wouldn't have to return it because the Jew is not makpid and less than a shavah pruta. Whereas by an akum, since they are makpid and less than a shavah pruta, they would have to give hashavah, they would have to return it. So Tosafot reads lo nitan leishavon slightly differently than Rashi. Rashi says there's no obligation to return it ever. Tosafot reads that there's no obligation to return it by a Jew that he steals from, but a non-Jew that he does steal from, he would have to return it, even bipachot mishavah pruta. Ella, so what does that mean? Bria bimoharki v'aborgani. Ru'a below moharki v'aborgani. The difference being that by Bria you would have the Moharki and the Borgani, and Ruah you won't have the Moharki and the Borgani. So that makes it much clearer now that we know what this Moharki and Borgani are. Right? It's very hard to know what they mean. We've seen Borganim or Borganim before, which are these huts or the straw huts. So that we have some sense of, but that's not the translation necessarily used here. Rashi, somewhat like that here, he says, Moharki or Borgani, Limalota Chatzer b'safsalin v'katedrot. Fill up the Chatzer with benches and katedrot, from like the word cathedral, but these are chairs that are ornate thrones. They have three sides to them. Basically, what it's saying is that you have real utilization, real usage of the Chatzer. You can use the Chatzer to the point where you can put items into there. You can change the dynamic or the flow of the Chatzer by putting in benches and by putting in chairs. So that's real utility that you're buying in there, and that's what the Skirut Bria is. Skirut Shein Bria is that you're still not entitled to do that. You might have bought the rights to do certain things or to traverse it, but not rights that you can really go ahead and make furniture changes in the Chatzer. So that's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, Tosafot brings from the Geonim that Moharki Ktiva V'Chotamot, that it means that writing, meaning to document it, and to seal it, and have it be sealed. The explanation here is that it has to be validated in a court, or it has to be a real document of sale. So that's the way he explains it. Aborgani explains as shluchim, as messengers. That's much harder to understand what exactly the messenger is doing here, or why you have messengers here. Could argue it's the messenger to go get the title to be sealed, and to have it actually be recorded that there was a change of ownership here. Or you could say the shluchim, the Shluchim themselves, when they were sent, they had a special seal that was put on the documents that was sent with them. Maybe it's an adjective describing the seal that's used here. It's the seal of the Shluchim. Some of the suggestions that I can make. Otherwise, it's very hard to understand what Shluchim have to do with this situation. The Rach, in the end, says, Mohorki Borgani is kmo binyan. It's to build something. That's what we see more like Borgani. But meaning that you can make real changes to the Chatzer. You can build in the Chatzer and make dynamic changes to it because you have real ownership. So the question is, do you have real ownership or subpar ownership over here in order to take possession so that you can now have your Eruv Tzeirot in this case? We have the Pasuk in Halacha that Schirut Re'uah is sufficient, and that's how it's done today. Most cases, when they use eminent domain, they go to the local authorities, and through eminent domain, they rent all the property in the local area, and by doing so, they then have ownership in order to make it into an Eruv Tzeirot. And that's how most of the modern-day Eruvin work, whether it's in Chutz Laretz, where they go to the non-Jewish authorities, or here in Eretz Yisrael, where they go to the civil authorities. There are a number of Eruvim in this town, and some of them are makpid to go to the military authority as well, or to the electric company, depending on who has authority over the land that you're trying to gain access to. And so they go to all the parties, or try to make sure that they've covered all the parties who have domain over this area in order to rent it out. So now, Gemara says, Ella, we explain now what a Schirut Bria and Schirut Ruah is. So, Hanich al Amanda Amar Schirut Bria Be'inon, according to the one who says that you need a full-fledged Schira, then we understand why the Akum might have reluctance to rent it to you. Because you're really taking possession over it. You're going to make changes to the Chatzer, and he may not be willing to do such a thing. Ella Amanda Amar Schirut Ruah Be'inon, according to the one who says that it's a symbolic schirut, that this schirut is not a full-fledged schirut where you can make changes to the chatzer, ma'ikal ha'meimar. What are we worried about here? Why is the akum going to be reluctant to rent it out to you? Why would this be a mitigating factor for you to live there? So, filo hachi, chashish akum l'kshafim. He would be worried about sorcery, witchcraft, velo mugar, and he wouldn't rent it out. He's fearful of renting it out because of some suspicions about the witchcraft or sorcery that one might perform by owning his property or renting his property, and because of that, he'll be reluctant to rent it out. So the gzeira is put in place for two reasons. One is that the expenditure that you'll incur in order to rent it out each week, plus the assumption that there'll be reluctance on the part of the akum to rent it to you, so therefore you would want to move out of this area because you won't be able to create an eruv chatzerot in this case. Kufo. The chatzer of Novi Kochavim has a status like a corral of animals. And you can carry in and out of the houses into the chatzer and the chatzer to the houses. So if you have an entire chatzer of non-Jews, entire chatzer of Akum, and a Jew goes there on Shabbat, that Jew can go into the house of the Akum, carry the items out of that house, into the chatzer, or from the chatzer into the house. There is no separate ownership. The only time we have a gzeirah, chachamim, for a Eruv Chatzerot, is where there is separate ownership, where you have areas that look like different ownership. You have the house, which is private ownership. You have the chatzer, which is joint ownership. So the chachamim would go there in that case, not to carry from one to the other until you do some sort of heker or change in the status of the area, so that people don't confuse the fact that just because you can carry from your house into a public area, the chatzer, so too you can carry from the private domain into the public domain. But over here, where the Obed Chachamim doesn't have separate and distinguishable rights, then there's really no ownership of the houses and no ownership of the chatzer, or there's only one owner of the house and one owner of the chatzer, and therefore you can take items in and out of the bayit and the chatzer as long as there are no Jews living in that chatzer. Now, as soon as you introduce a Jew to that area, then you have a problem. Yesh sham Yisrael echad oser dibrei Rabbi Meir. So if you put in one Jew into that area, Rabbi Meir says they are problematic. Rabbi Yaakov says you need two Jews in that area in order to make it problematic in terms of carrying in and out. So Rabbi Meir says one Jew is a problem. Rabbi says two Jews are a problem. So now we have basically a stira here, which is if the chatzer of the Obed Chachamim is kedir shel beima, then it's mutar lachnis lotzi. Why does adding Israel to the picture change that dynamic? Amar mar, chatzero shel kum hari hu kedir shel beima. We have a Mishnah, we have Rabbi Meir here. In one case, the status of the area of the Akum is considered to be Kedir Shel Beima. In the other instance, Rabbi Meir is saying that if you live with an Akum, it causes you problems. So how do you resolve or reconcile between these two issues? One is he's saying that the Dirat Obed Chachamim has no status whatsoever. Yet on the other hand, he's saying that there's a problem to live with the Obed Chachamim. It causes a problem in terms of Chetzerot. Lokasha. Hadite, hadolete. Difference is if he's there or if he's not there. Umayka sabar. Let's try to understand. Let's take a step back and understand why that helps the situation. Ika sabar dira below balim shma dira. A dira which the landlord or the owner is absent is called a dira. Afilu akum nami nitzar. Then even the akum should be problematic. If the akum is not present, but his dua dira, then it should be problematic. And if you believe that the absence of the owners makes it into ois dira, that it's no longer considered to be a residence, then afilu Israel nami lo nitzar. Then why should a Jew be a problem? When a Jew is not there, why should their property be a problem? Leolam kasavar dira b'lo balim lo shma dira. A dira, which the people are absent, the owners are absent, is not called a dira. Israel dechi ita asar kileta gazu be rabbanim. Israel, when he's present, causes a problem. So when he's absent, the Chachamim would go there, that his absence would still be a problem, even though it's lo shma dira, even though it's not really a residence. Nevertheless, it goes there that we worry about it. Akum dechi ite gzeira shema yomad m'masav. Even when he's present, his dira is not really a dira. The only reason we're oser it is because shema yilamed mi m'masav, because he might learn from his ways. Kiite asar kileite lo asar. Therefore, when he's present, they made it asur. When he's not present, they did not make it asur. So here we have a distinction in the way that the residence of a Jew is going to work and the residence of an Akum is going to work. Underlying the difference is whether their residence is considered to be a residence or not. The Jew's residence is considered to be a residence. And therefore, when he's present in his residence, he causes a problem for the Eruv because he's a resident of the Chatzer. When he is absent, technically he wouldn't cause no issue for the chatzer, but the chachamim would go there, up to when he's not there, up to when he is there, or maybe he'll show up in the middle of Shabbat, and then you'll have a problem, because as soon as he shows up, he has a dira, and he'll cause a problem for the chatzer. So because of that, by a Jew, whether he's present, mi'ikar alocha, which is a problem, or whether he's not present, gzeira derabanan, we say he causes a problem for the roof, and you have to deal with him. You have to deal with his property, you have to deal with his ownership. On the other hand, for the Akum, the underlying thesis is that Dirat Akum ki Dirat Beima. His residence doesn't have a status of residence. So once we're at that point, the only reason to be Oser is because Shema Yomad Mimasav. Because you might learn from him, and we're trying to prevent you from living together with the Akum. That is the Gzeira Derabanan. So the Gzeira Derabanan, they only enforced, only put into place when the Akum is present. When he's not present, when he's not resident, we don't worry about it, because the underlying restriction is already only a gzeira. So to make a gzeira on top of that, then, when he's not present, you should also have that we weren't willing to do. So Gemara says, V'chi leite lo asar? Is that really true? When he's not present, that it's not asur? V'atanan. Miniach et beito, b'halach lo lishbot b'ir acharet. President leaves his house, and then goes to stay in another city for Shabbat. Echad nachri ve'echad Yisrael oser. Whether he's a Jew or non-Jew, he causes a problem. Divrei Rabbi Meir. And this is Rabbi Meir, who we're trying to explain. We're trying to explain his shita, and he says there's no difference. But it says, hoto da'ata biyome. There's a problem where you can return on the same day. So as far as the Jew's concerned, we understand it. Meikar din, if he was present, be problematic, because he has a residence. When he's not present, we have the Gzeira Derabbanan that says that it's problematic. So we understand the halacha with regards to Yisrael, whether he's present or not. The Akum, we said, okay, that's only a Gzeira Derabbanan, because his Dira does not have a shame Dira. So when he's present, we're Gozer. When he's not present, we're not Gozer. So here we have this case, Mishnah, that says when he's not present, he causes a problem. My answer is that's a case where he's close enough where he can return during Shabbat. And because of that, the Akum does travel on Shabbat. And most likely he will travel on Shabbat. So in that case, if he is close enough where he could return on Shabbat, then we worry about it. Because if he does return on Shabbat, he'll actually change the status of the chatzer. And you can't rectify that. What are you going to tell people? Okay, you can carry. All of a sudden he shows up on Shabbat, no more carrying in the chatzer. That's too difficult to enforce. So the Gzeirat Chachamim that says when the Akum is present doesn't only mean when he's present, it means when he could be present. If he's either physically present or he's within a certain distance that he could be present on Shabbat, that's enough to ruin it for you. Once he's outside of that perimeter or periphery where he cannot return on Shabbat, then we don't worry about his ownership in the Chatzer, because the Dira v'Nakum is lo shmei Dira, and Chamim, we're going to make Gzeira to even extend it to say when he's not present. So all we did was, we expanded what's called being present for the Akum. We thought before being present for the Akum means physically present, he was in his house. The answer is, not only if he's in his house, but even if he's proximate to his house. If he's close enough that he can return during Shabbat, that's equivalent of him being there, because we don't want to run into problems where he returns on Shabbat, and you're going to try to change the status in the middle of Shabbat. So as long as he's within that closeness or proximity there, he could return on Shabbat, that's enough to ruin the Eruv for you. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that only once you have two Yisraelim in the Chatzer does it cause a problem. In general, we know that the halacha is Divrei HaMeikil with regards to a roof. So it would make sense to say that the halacha is Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. V'un Amar Minhag ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. The Minhag is, the tradition is to follow Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Nagu'am ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. The people are subscribing to the position of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. The difference here being both Tosafot and Rashi discuss this. Halacha means that we paskin that way, and we paskin in public that way. We will give public drashot and say the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. That's what it means, halacha Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. When we say minhag Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that means that we will not publicly give such a psak, but if someone comes and asks for a psak halacha, or comes to Beit Din, we will tell them that the halacha is Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. So we won't voluntarily or proactively say the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, but if we're asked the question, is the halacha like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the answer is yes. Rabbi Yochanan's position, which is nagu'am, we both don't publicly give such a psak. If you come for a private psak, we also will not give it to you, but if someone acts in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, we will not stop them. We will not be mochin biyado. We will not try to intervene or prevent them from acting in such a manner. So those are three different levels of how expressing strongly the halacha is to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Halacha being the absolute halacha is this way, we'll paskin in public. Minhag being that we won't paskin in public, but if you come and ask for a psak halacha, we will tell you halacha is to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Nagu is that we won't give you a psak halacha, but if one acts in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, we're not going to stop them. The Ri says something very interesting over here. If you have a single Jew living in a city with a wall around it, they're full-fledged mechitzot, and their doors are closed at night, he can carry it around the entire city on Shabbat, because there's no other Jew in the city that's being osir on him. So today, that doesn't really happen where he's the only Jew in the city or the walled city, but it does come up in an issue that we raised yesterday, which was with apartment buildings. What happens if you're the only Jew in the apartment building? So in that case, it's possible that you'd be able to carry through the hallways and the lobbies without putting in a place in a roof, because you now have only one Jew in the place and nobody to be osir on the Jew because of the common ownership. The only other common ownership is through non-Jews. So this would have an interesting nafkamina with regards to apartment buildings today, and you have a single Jew living in that apartment. So now, Amalei Abaye the Rav Yosef. Abaye, the Talmud of Rav Yosef, poses this question to Rav Yosef. Kaimelon, we have a principle, Mishnat Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kav Venaki. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov appears a finite number of times in Shas, Shas Mishnayot, and Venaki. And when he does appear, it's clean, it's pure, we're going to pass him like him. So basically, anywhere Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov appears in the Mishnah, Lach is going to be like him because his appearance is so minimal. Plus, when he does speak, whatever his position is, it's a good position or strong position, and therefore we pass an halacha like him. So number one, that's a reason passing like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in our Mishnah because of this principle. In addition to that, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. On top of that, we have Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel passing halacha ki Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Putting those two together, that means it's obvious that the halacha here is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Mahu le'orei b'gmekom rabo. So now we move over into a new question, which is more halacha bifnei rabo. That one is restricted from giving psak halacha in front of their rebbe. So we'll discuss why that one may not give psak halacha in front of their rebbe. Rashi says the problem is halacha bimakom rabo is chutzpah. It's a chutzpah to be more halacha in front of your rebbe. On the other hand, the other possibility is that it's a problem in terms of the system as a whole. We want to maintain a certain system of authority, respect for authority, respect kavod for those that are more knowledgeable. And in order to do that, if one is posik lifnei rabo, there's a breakdown in the system. There's a breakdown in the authority that is with the Rebbe, and the Talmid now is abrogating that authority, and it will lead to a broader chaos within the system. The nafkamina between these two possibilities would be whether he can be mochel. If it has to do with chutzpah, Talmid is acting with chutzpah towards the Rebbe, then the Rebbe, if he is mochel, could allow the Talmid to give psak halacha bifnei rabo. On the other hand, if it has to do with the system as a whole, then it's not the Rebbe's authority or permission to forgive or allow the Talmid to give psak lifnei rabo. It's done to protect the system, and he doesn't have authority to give up that kavod. It's similar to what we have by a melech and a talmud chacham. A melech shemochel kvodo ain't kvodo machul. A king that's mochel and kvodo doesn't work, because the king, his authority, his position is an institution. And he can't take away the institution. He can't be mochel in the kavod of the institution. On the other hand, the Gemara says about a Talmud Chacham that he acquires his Torah. It belongs to him personally. And if it's about your personal kavod, then you can forgive. So to over here, if morei halacha b'nei rabo is a personal issue, of course you can be mochel kavodo. If it has something to do with the institution, with the court systems, with the authority and the psak halacha, then he would not be able to be mochel kavodo. So now, he says, are you allowed to give a psak halacha like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in front of your Rebbe? So Amar Lei, Rabbi Yosef responds to Abaye, afilo biata b'kutcho. Even an egg to be eaten together with this Babylonian dip, which included milchic products in it, to eat an egg with milchics, bo minei mi Rav Chista kol shanei de Rav Huna. Rabbi Yosef says, I asked that question of Rav Chista as long as Rav Huna was around, velo orili, and he did not respond to me, he did not give me a psak halacha. So even though it's something that's completely obvious, an egg, then Rashi is going to read that an egg is parif. And of course you can eat an egg with cheese. So there's no question about the halacha here. Nevertheless, when I went to pose that question to Rav Chista, such an obvious halacha, he refused to respond to me because Rav Huna was his Rebbe, was still alive. Since Rav Huna the Rebbe was still alive, he would not give psak halacha as long as Rebbe Rav Huna was around. That's the way Rashi reads it. So Rashi says, the question here is, came into Lotaya Bisvara. It has nothing to do with discerning ability. Umilta b'shitahu, and it's so obvious that it should be mutar. That's a biased question. Or do we say that it's a chutzpah, and it's not allowed despite the obviousness of the outcome? The answer that Rav Yosef gives him is, despite the obviousness of the outcome, it's still a chutzpah, and one cannot give a psak halacha such an obvious situation. So that's the question according to Rashi that's being posed here. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, if you look at Tosafot, Ma'u l'ruye b'mokom rabe, Omeri, kohani ho ra'ot, kugon, shubah ma'asi lefanav, umore la sotkein, avalim sholim le talmid halacha, kedibre mi, yachol omar lo, komash bidato, vach lo yireo ma'aseh shubah. The first qualification Tosafot gives is, there's a difference between halacha l'maseh, and halacha in limud ha-Torah. They come, and you're learning Torah, and they ask you, who's halacha like, then the Talmud can respond, even in front of his Rebbe, or even the city of his Rebbe. Because that's not what's precluded over here. What's precluded over here is giving halacha l'maisa. They come with a case, and they want a psak halacha. That's where the Talmud can't give it. That's number one. Number two is, biata b'kutcho, according to Tosafot, is too simple. It's too simple a case. What do you mean? That an egg is parv? That you can have that with milchiks? Who doesn't know that? That's so obvious that even a Talmid could say that in front of his Rav. So Tosfot takes away that bottom rung of the ladder where something is so obvious or so common that you don't even have to worry about your Rebbe. So what's the case here? Tosafot says the case here is a case where you chef the chicken and you find the eggs inside the chicken. So in a case where you find the eggs inside the chicken, when they're complete eggs or finished eggs, then they have a din that they're parv. So already there, that's a step up to know that that eggs found inside the chicken are halachically okay. You could go even one step further, which is that the eggs inside of the chicken, depending if they're merurah b'gidin or not, how well developed they are, they can have a status of being fleishik. So there is a point or threshold beyond which when they are fleishik and when they turn into being parv, when they're a separate entity from the chicken. So it could be that that was the type of question being asked. Now that's a big nafka meaning. According to Rashi, you can't say about anything. Even as obvious as an egg with cheese, you can't say anything as a Talmud. According to Tosafot, something so obvious as that, you could say. It's only when you take one step up, which is, there's at least some question here, then do we enter the problem of giving Pesach Halacha in front of your Rebbe. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Amalei Rabbi Yaakov b'Abba l'Rabbaye, go Megillat Tanit, d'chtiva, umancho, ma'u l'orui, b'atrei d'rabbi. The Megillat Tanit, Rashi points out over here, the reason they point out Megillat Tanit is because it's the only Torah Shebaal Peh that's written in their day. Torah B'Shebaal Peh was a sort to be written down, and their day Torah Shebaal was literally Torah Shebaal Peh. It was taught orally. Only thing that was written down happened to be this Megillat Tanit, and that's why it's called a Megillah, because it was written down. Megillat Tanit, which has the holidays on which one does fast, one may not fast, one can have a hespet, one cannot have a hespet. All those holidays were enumerated in Megillat Tanit. So the question Rabbi Yaakov B'Abba is posing to Abaye is here, where it's written, is that enough to take away the problem of Pesach Halacha Lifnei Rabo? Because all you have to do is open up the book and you can see inside what it is. Rashi says over here, he's coming to ask the Halacha, or the person asking Halacha, are you allowed to fast on this day? And he says, no, it's in a day that is asur to fast. So that's the question here. Is it a day that's asur to fast? Amalei hachi amar Rav Yosef. Bai says, he tells him over what Rav Yosef had told him. Afila biyata b'kutcha. Even an egg with regards to cheese. I asked Rav Yosef, Koshani de Rav Huna, all the years that Rav Huna was around, Velorili, and he did not respond to me because he wasn't giving psak. So something as obvious as that, you can't give psak halacha, so certainly also by Megillat Tanit, you can't give such a psak halacha. So Tosafot over here distinguishes between Isur and Heter, really. He says that the Yefrushe Misura, which we'll see in tomorrow's daf, to separate someone for an Isur, there's Ein Chachmav, Ein Tfuna, there is no holding back. Even a Talmid in front of his Rebbe can go ahead and stop someone from doing something wrong. So in stopping someone from doing something wrong, even a Talmid before Rabbo was allowed to do that. On the other hand, Tosfot says, what they're talking about in Megillat Tanit are on the days that you can fast, or days that you can give a eulogy. He's talking about it in the positive form. That's the question. Is it mutar to give a psak halacha in the cases where we're talking about what you're allowed to do, not what you're not allowed to do? What's interesting in Tosafot, what you would think was lafushe misura, to separate from isur would be when a person is actively involved in isur. They say, stop, stop! And therefore we grant you a right to do that in front of your Rebbe. But here, here's not active in the problem, he's come to ask you, can I not? And you're giving up psak halacha. But Tosafot extends that even to taking a negative stance, saying that one may not fast on this day. That's the question equivalent of a fushre misura. And that psak halacha is not governed by this isur of giving psak halacha b'fnei rabo. That really is expanding it. And the only time it's a problem is when you give permission to do something. That's a problem of psak halacha b'fnei rabo. So far, Tosafot has done a number of things to limit this halacha. The first limitation that he put on this halacha is that it only applies to halacha l'maaseh, not to limud haTorah. Number two restriction he put on it is that it has to be at least something that is not obvious. Talking about an egg and cheese, that's way too obvious, and that would be mutar. The question only arises once you have some sort of question where people might not know the halacha, where an egg's inside the chicken, something that would make it a little more complex, then is there a problem. In addition, now Tosfot has another qualification, which is, it's only when it's a heter, not when it's lafushe meisura. Fushe meisura is not governed by this. So far you already have three qualifications that narrow the halacha according to Tosafot. Now Rav Chista, Uri b'kafre, b'shneid Rav Huna. This is your question, which is that Rav Chista gave psak halacha in Kafre. You can say Kafre is the villages, or Kafre is the name of a place. B'shneid Rav Huna. In the years of Rav Huna. Now we just saw before that Rav Chista was unwilling to give psak by the years of his Rebbe, Rav Huna. All of a sudden now we have him giving Psak Halacha. What's the difference? He was in Kafre. In Kafre, which was not in the city of Rav Huna. Rav Huna's city is Pumpedita. Even though both of them are in Bavel, nevertheless they're considered to be separate areas or separate cities. So the unwillingness of Rav Chisda to give Psak Halacha Bifnei Rabbo was only when he was in the same city as Rebbe, when he was in Pumpedita. But when he was in Kafre, then he had a different view of the world, and he believed that he could give a Psak Halacha. Rav Amnuna, Ori B'Charato D'Argaz, Rav Amnuna gave Psak Halacha in a place called Charato D'Argaz. Argaz was the name of the person, the sorcerer who made the city. And Charato D'Argaz, he gave Psak Halacha B'Shani to Rav Chisda, in the years of Rav Chisda, who was his Rebbe. And nevertheless, even though it was his Rebbe, he wasn't in his Rebbe's city. And since he wasn't in his Rebbe's city, he was willing to give Psak Halacha. Tosafot does point out that there are two Rav Amnunas, because we have Rav Amnuna who's a Talmud of Rav Chisda here, and you have another Rav Amnuna who's a Talmud of Rav. So if he's a Talmud of Rav, obviously he's not a Talmud of Rav Chisda. You have that same problem with Rav Huna and Rav Chisda in general also, because Rav Huna and Rav Chisda in some places in Shas, who's the Talmud, who's the Rebbe, gets changed around a little bit. It's clear that they probably were Talmidei Chaverim, which we'll see in tomorrow's daf, that they were both peers in a Talmud-Rebbe relationship. Question of who was older or who had was the status of Rebbe might have changed over time. That's a question that Tosafot raises in many places. The last thing Tosafot mentions down here at the bottom of Tosafot on Samach Bet Amud Bet is when he explains what Rashi says. He says, "V'tzarchamar the Talmid Chaver de Rav Huna Havo." That Rav Chisda was a peer of Rav Huna's. He was a Talmid Chaver. He was both a student but also a peer. More of Amnuna, similar to what Rav Amnuna has in this case, because he was paskin b'charata d'argas. Shani Rav Chisda, the Mefresh was smoking from the David Chaver Dilei. Aval Talmid Gamur, Ein Yechol Arot, Afilu Shalom B'Mokum Rabbe. If he's a full-fledged Talmid, even when he's not in his Rebbe's area, then he cannot give a Psak Halacha. Now, if he's a Talmid Chaver, then outside of three Parsaot, then he was Bid Mutar to give Psak Halacha. V'fanav is Asur, and Chayav Mita means within Shlosh Parsaot. So Talmud Chaver has a special status that within three parsaot of his Rebbe, he can't give Psak Halacha. Outside of three parsaot, then he can give Psak Halacha. On the other hand, when it comes to a regular Talmid, even outside of three parsaot, he may not give a Psak Halacha. Now in terms of Chiyuv Mita, that might only apply when he's within the three parsaot. Outside of the three parsaot, maybe it would not apply with a regular Talmid. So now you have a Halacha that almost narrows the situation down. First of all, within three parsaot, you can't give Psak Halacha no matter who you are. And even outside of three parsaot, Tosafot now narrows it down only to a Talmid Chaver, not to a regular Talmid. Now, the Halacha will deal with this more tomorrow, but this has huge implications in terms of the system working. If all Halacha would have to be brought to the Rebbe, there's going to be a breakdown in the system. He teaches Talmidim, they go out, and then there are just more and more Piskei Halacha, and Talmud says, I can't give a Psak Halacha, you have to go to my Rebbe. So then, there's no delegation of authority. There's no way to delegate the ability to give Psak Halacha, which in the system, it caused the system to collapse. The Rebbe can't keep pace. Nobody's going to get an answer anymore. There's just going to be too much load on the Rebbe. So there has to be some sort of balance here, and that's what we have to figure out, where that balance is in order to allow the system to function. Otherwise, there's just going to be too much on one person. So that comes back to what the problem is of giving Psak Halacha within the context of one's Rebbe. Is the problem chutzpah? Is the problem that you should check with your Rebbe, you should make sure that you're right? If your Rebbe's already here, then why not take advantage of the fact that he's here? What's the exact issue with not giving Psak Halacha? And then how can we get around that or get over that so that the Talmidim can give Psak Halacha without having to go back to the Rebbe and allowing the system to have delegation of authority? Okay, we'll stop over here.